Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. The NAMM Foundation is working to assure that all children have the opportunity to learn and grow with music, and that music is part of daily living for everyone. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hi, this is Mary Lurson, Executive Director of the NAMM Foundation, and welcome to this episode of Talking Up Music Education, where we talk about a person's journey through making music, their early music education, their current contributions in music, and their dreams and aspirations for what's ahead, with our hopes that those that are listening engage in music in some way, or at the very least, are advocates for music education for all people. So thank you for joining us. We are live here at Summer NAMM in Nashville, Tennessee, and I'm delighted to have with me guitarist, singer, songwriter, Thomas Claxton.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us here in our little sound booth at the Nashville Music Center, and it's thundering outside, so there's a storm. So if we have a little bit of rainstorm noises, we'll be forgiven, I think.
That's all right. I always found thunderstorms kind of relaxing, to be honest.
Okay, very good. Well, Thomas, we always start our podcasts with musicians of all types, from opera singers to singer-songwriters to band arrangers to classical pianists. And we always ask the same question to start our podcast. What is your musical story? When did you start music? Where did you start? And as a child, because so much of what our podcast and our effort at the NAMM Foundation is about is making sure that every child has the chance to learn music. And we learn about this from the stories of other people. So when did you start, and what type of opportunity did you have early on in your life?
Well, early on, my earliest memories would actually be, being a little kid singing in church, you know. I remember doing that a bunch. You know, my parents were big churchgoers, and, I think that was very important to being inspirational for me to continue forward with it. When I got into elementary school, I was enrolled in the music programs, and going into middle school, I remember I wanted to join the band. But my mother didn't think I would stick with it, so she wouldn't let me join band because she didn't want to put the money into a band instrument and everything and me not stick with it. So instead, I joined chorus because it didn't cost any money to have that instrument. Mm-hmm. And I kept going from there, you know, just studied all through school. And once I graduated high school, I decided to start doing it as a full-time career. And it just, you know, I had a lot of good direction when I was a kid, and a lot of good teaching. And
that's great. It sounds like there was genuine opportunity. Where did you grow up? Was in the Georgia area?
Yeah. I was adopted in Florida, but ever since I was 2 days old, I've been about an hour outside of Savannah, Georgia.
So, oh, wow.
Little tiny town called Guyton.
And there was, there was a music education program that offered a band opportunity. You went into sounds like a good choral program, right?
Oh, I went, in my opinion, for a public school, we had the best choral program. I mean, and we did competitions, and I remember my teacher, I got to give her a lot of credit. Her name is Dr. Lauren Ringwall. She was incredibly inspirational to me. It was really funny because, you know, I was a little mischievous kid who used to get put in the hallway a lot in the middle school. But once I got into high school, it really kind of took off. And once I kind of understood what was going on, I became part of the team and everything. And it was nice to be a part of something like that, because I remember that chorus. We would do the honors chorus programs at the different universities and all state choruses, and we would go into these competitions, and almost every single time our chorus would wind up winning, you know, first place. And we prided ourselves in going above the status quo for public school choruses. And it wasn't just a class that you took because you had to take a class. If you were in that class, you wanted to be in it. And if she didn't feel like you were ready to be a team player for that chorus, she would recommend that you get put into a different class. Mm-hmm. So it was a very tight unit, and that that class really became a family in a lot of ways. You know, it was very different.
The ensembles in the high schools do. I mean, it's just everybody's really watching out for each other.
Oh, right? Sure. Yeah. And she and I, my teacher and I, we still talk to this day. So, you know, she's been like a lifelong mentor to me, you know, and it had to be the music teacher to do that.
The influence, and when there is an opportunity to work with someone that has high standards. Right?
Oh, absolutely.
Relentlessly high standards.
That's right.
For kids that are all over the map because they're teenagers and someone that's holding them to perfect multiple part harmony, you know, no matter how you feel, no matter what is going on around you. Right?
She was persistent and she kept those high standards. And I believe she's teaching at a Piedmont now, not too far outside of Atlanta. And she makes me up, from what I understand, part of what she teaches her upcoming students who are going to wind up being teachers one day. You know, have patience with the mischievous kid, because I had a kid named Thomas who I stuck out in the hallway all the time.
And
he wound up becoming a career musician.
Yeah,
so,
isn't that great?
That's awesome. She's great.
And you revealed to me just before we started that you were a first tenor.
That's right. Yeah,
which means that, well, to even have a first tenor means that was a rigorous choral program.
Oh yeah,
a lot of. Did you do a cappella? And
some. It was all a cappella when we were doing that. I mean, you know, she gave me a few solo parts here and there, but we had, it was very, very detailed. I mean, there was first sopranos, second sopranos. Yeah. I mean, you know, right on down, she would literally break it down to very detailed parts, you know, that you just don't see happening in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. And most of the time you go into a chorus like that and, you know, you'll see the baritone, the tenor, the alto, soprano, and they don't really get split up like that.
No, that was a very sophisticated program.
For sure.
Right. And if you were first tenor, as I also was teasing you a little bit, you were a very important part of her ensemble as well.
Hopefully.
To have a first tenor. First tenors, yeah, that's great. So you got bitten by the bug of being a musician.
Sure.
After high school then, what was next? What was the next chapter? Did you sail into following your ambitions as a... As a guitar, you're a guitarist, right?
I taught myself how to play guitar, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, I studied music theory and did all that. And, you know, so I kind of put two and two together. I wish I'd have had some better training on the guitar. But from the stage that I was at right at that moment, coming out of high school, I actually got started playing music professionally while I was in high school. And I was probably about the 11th grade when I played my first solo acoustic show anywhere. I'll call it a gig. The thing was, I couldn't think of anything else that I should be doing. You get to that phase when you're in high school and it's like, okay, what's next? Where am I going to take my life? And I don't think there's any other thing I really am meant to do besides music in some way, shape, or form. And I don't mean to, you know, put that in the one category either. You know, I take my music career and I do things from promotion all the way to big events and things like that, and as well as performing, so and
production,
songwriting,
production,
all that stuff. I enjoy it.
Yeah, organizer.
Right. You know, but in some way, shape, or form, it all involves music. And one day when music's wrapping up for me, who knows? But I remember my first gig was at a little coffee shop in the Savannah Mall, and I was in, like I said, in 11th grade in high school. I never got paid anything to do it. You know, it was just something I would do after school and go out and play these gigs. And that was very important to me because of the fact that it got me, you know, used to playing in front of people. I didn't mind, you know, the shoppers would come in and have a cup of coffee and sit and listen to some acoustic music and leave. And I did that for 2 years and never got paid anything for it.
Coffee, though, right?
Coffee, yeah. They gave me some coffee.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, of course. my parents didn't probably want me drinking coffee as a high school student, but, you know, whatever. It worked. You know, from there, I remember anybody who knows anything about Savannah, Georgia knows it's a big tourist town and lots of partying and stuff like that, you know. So I wandered down to the historic area of River Street after that and went into a venue called the Bayou Cafe, and I spoke to the guy behind the bar. Didn't know he was the owner. He was a great guy, you know, he's still a great dude. He was there, and I said, hey, I play music, green as grass. I didn't know what I was talking about, you know, and didn't know how to go about getting this thing. And I said, I play music, and is there any way I could perform for your venue? And he goes, well, you got your guitar? I said, yes, sir, it's out in the car. Well, shut up and go get it and start playing. And I mean, it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, so there was nobody on the stage. So I ran out there and grabbed it and started playing and played for about 2 hours. And he looked at me and said, all right, you're not bad. All right, call me tomorrow. And that's where I started getting paid to play music.
Well, know? That was the combination of a real determination and a lucky break, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you went, if you hadn't asked the question, right?
Well, that's the thing about
me. I play music, can I play here?
Exactly.
I'm very direct. Can I play here?
You know, if I want to know something, I don't feel like there's any better way to know than to ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually don't hesitate to find out. And, you know, some people would think, you know, well, you're not there yet, but how do you know? You know, you just got to ask.
So was that kind of the launch pad then? Was that that was the official beginning? Because you've done so many things since then. And what are some of the highlights of what you've been able to do over the last several years?
Well, the last several years have been really exciting. I remember back in 2008 was the first time I actually got to do a really huge level show. And that's the point where I consider, you know, I always consider gigs and shows two different things. I hate when people say I'm playing a show and they're just sitting in the bar. That's not the same thing. A show is very different. And there was a tour that was very short-lived, and Chuck Negron from Three Dog Night was the featured singer for the show. And I got hired on as the musical director, or the vocal director, should I say, for the tour, and as a backing vocalist for it. So it was my job to, you know, actually go through and work out all the parts that every singer on the tour was supposed to be singing.
Music theory came in really handy.
Yeah,
right?
It really did. It helped out a lot, you know. And all the singers on the tour were very cool. They were very nice people. Chuck himself was an incredibly nice guy. I remember... We were having a rehearsal with him one day, and one of the pieces in one of those old Three Dog Night songs, I think it was Eli's Coming, kept getting screwed up in the middle of it, and it kept stopping halfway through the song, and everybody was getting irritated, and Chuck's, you know, and finally he looks over at me and he goes, "For crying out loud, tell him what's wrong." And I was like, well, it ain't them, Chuck.
Oh, one of those moments.
Yeah. So, but, you know, it was a really simple thing. But, you know, being a young kid at the time, you know, I was nervous and I didn't know what in the world to do. And that tour didn't last but a handful of weeks. It kind of fell apart quickly. But I got to play some great arenas along the way, and did the Amway Arena in Orlando. The problem with, it's not a problem, but I wouldn't say, but the thing about something like that is when you get a taste for those big venues and that big production, it never goes away. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's a blessing and a curse, because one second you're playing in front of 15,000 people, next second you're back in the shoebox playing on a tiny stage in a corner. But I'm really thankful for all of that stuff. You know, everybody asks me all the time why I don't go off and try out for one of these reality shows or whatnot. You know, I really don't have much of an interest in it. I tried it one time, and I saw kind of what it was all about, and I see the value of the way I'm coming up in the business. You know, and I don't think a lot of people really appreciate coming up in the grassroots of it and paying your dues, so to speak, and working these venues hours at five nights a week.
I would say it might feel like that, but I think there's a lot of appreciation for that.
I would hope
because I think that's the real way.
Yeah, I think so personally.
I think that's the, you know, the every musician that we've had conversation with on this little program, Talking at Music Education, is doing that.
Well, see, to me,
it's a combination of, as you said, the big shows, the big names, you're a journeyman. We're journeyman artists, journeyman singer songwriters, you know.
Sure.
The doing of it is when the tragedy, not to do it is the tragedy.
Agreed.
Doing it is the fulfillment.
To me, that's where the longevity is, actually, you know, and coming up in that route of the business, because I think today we live in such a fast-paced society. Everybody, you know, a lot of young performers, they all want the quick, you know, result. And it doesn't work like that oftentimes in music. You know, you hear about it happening. You know, somebody puts out a video on YouTube and they're a star overnight. That doesn't happen all the time, though. You know, most people really do have to put a lot of time and energy into it. Mm-hmm. And I'm convinced that a lot of people don't get where they want to go because of the fact that there's something missing along the way. They didn't stick with it long enough. They didn't, you know, something. I don't know, really. You know, everybody's got a different story. But, you know, with me, I wanted to, you know, ride it out you know, I'm not going to stop at it.
And you take these opportunities as they come to you.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Yeah. Because I never considered, I think success is very subjective, you know, and I never considered success necessarily being famous. You know, I just want to be able to, you know, make a good living playing music and pay my bills and meet a lot of great people.
And do the work.
Do the work. That's what I enjoy.
Let's talk more about the work. When did the songwriting become a part of what you love to do and be part of your identity as a musician? Was that early also?
It was. I would write some really detailed stuff in school, and some of it would freak my teachers out. It was hilarious. You know, I would write some stuff that didn't make any sense for somebody my age, and of course they were pulling my parents in there going, you know, Thomas wrote this today, and maybe you should read over this. And it was nothing bad. You know, it was just something that somebody my age might not be normally writing about. And so I channeled that and started going from poems into songs, and especially after I taught myself how to play the guitar. And I had a lot of inspiration through rock and roll. You know, I was a big John Lennon fan. To me, John Lennon was the creme de la creme of songwriters. And, you know, the Beatles had a big impact on what I do. And I found, you know, grunge rock in the 90s and all that, you know. So the rock and roll overall just had an enormous impact in the way I wrote. And I remember I released my first album called Middle of Nowhere in 2005. And then I did a follow-up album called Return to Nowhere in 2011. And, you know, the first one was just me and the acoustic guitar. The second one was me with the full band. And my latest album called Age of Propaganda is going to be coming out pretty soon. And I've got a lot of great players playing on that one. Like you said, the past few years have really kind of taken off for me. So the more people I've gotten to know, the more networking I've gotten involved in. This new album's got members of Huey Lewis and the News, specifically Mario Cipollina, who was their bass player. If you ever watch any of the old news videos, you'll see Mario with the sunglasses and a cigarette in his mouth. And Michael Hampton, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer from Parliament Funkadelic, is playing on this album. And, you know, a lot of great guys, you know, it's just such a long list, you know. What I like about this album a lot is not only is it, you know, these people like Grammy Award winners and Rock Hall of Famers, but I'm also working with my best friends back home who play in my band Thomas Claxton and the Myth. And that's Paul Cooper, Chris Stubbs, Rodney Smith, Craig Johansson, and my best friend Mark Vacker. They're all helping me out, you know, and putting this album together, as well as working with these amazing people. And it's being recorded and produced by Eric Winbush, who also resides out of Savannah.
Well, congratulations on all of that.
Thank you.
Is it mostly original material?
Yeah, it's mostly original, which is funny. You know, playing in Savannah wants cover songs, you know, to play for all their tourists. But when I go out on the road, I do a lot of original stuff. And my albums have been primarily original. The only album I actually put a cover on was the first one. I did a cover of John Lennon's Working Class Hero. Mm-hmm. And other than that, the rest of it's been original.
Wow. As a musician, a very active musician, producing, writing songs, producing your own, producing albums, a new one coming out soon, how much time do you spend on the road on an annual basis? Doing run-out concerts and run-out gigs and your own, plus being sidemen on other people's gigs? And
let's say this. I perform over 300 shows a year, gigs primarily, but, you know, some shows. And I know that in 2017, about 160 of them were local. The other 140 plus were out of town. And I'm working right now, aside from my solo work, I'm also working with a lady out of Los Angeles named April Henry. And she and I have an acoustic duo that we go around and perform with. And she's an amazing vocalist herself. And our vocals complement well together. And I know that in 2017, we took off on a tour all the way up the East Coast from Miami all the way to New York City. We hit Baltimore and Philly and all the major cities on the way up. And then we went on another one from Houston, Texas, all the way up to Anchorage, Alaska. We did Houston, Dallas, Palm Springs, San Francisco, Vancouver, British Columbia, and Anchorage. And then a lot of that stuff has been, I've been doing a lot of gigs here in New York City and Los Angeles. So I enjoy the traveling aspect of it. You know, to me, it's very important. If you want to be seen, you got to get out of your element. Mm-hmm. And while I respect and really love my element, you know, because I told you earlier, you know, when the chaos is done, I like to retreat back to my cave and get my quiet time and everything.
Right,
but
right. But
I love seeing things. And I'll never forget walking into the Sequoia Forest in California and seeing those huge trees and things, mm-hmm. stuff I'd never see if I wouldn't have left home.
Right. Well, also, it's what a musician needs to be doing.
Absolutely,
because right? There's the your work needs to go out to reach the audience
for sure
and touch the audience, right?
Yeah,
that's part of it. You're doing something really wonderful while we're here in Nashville for Summer NAMM. Can you tell us a little bit about what's happening tomorrow night at 9 p.m. when most of us in a normal life would be going back to our homes and hotels and recovering from a full day at the Summer NAMM trade show? But what are we all doing?
Yeah, we're
and
all.
What are you helping us do?
Well, you know, at the first part of the year, I was thinking about. Because like I said, I work for a lot of hard rock cafes, and hard rocks have been great to me over the years. But I never see many NAMM after parties happening at the hard rocks. And I understand the one in L.A. because, you know, NAMM takes place in Anaheim. L.A. is 45 minutes away. That's kind of hard to pull off an after party for. But I never remembered seeing one here at the hard rock in Nashville. And I mentioned to my attorney, Ron Beanstock, and accountant, Alan Friedman, and I talked to them. I said, look, if we get... some merchants involved in this, I think we could pull this off because of the way the Hard Rock has their private party room set up. I think we could pull it off, and it could be really something that's kind of impossible not to work. So they worked with me a little bit on it, you know, kind of throwing some ideas out there, whatnot. But tax season hit, and of course, Alan got caught up with the taxes, and Ron had to do his stuff, you know, working for his law firm. But Alan told me, you know, that he was in touch with Crystal Morris from Gator. And I said, well, that's great, because I'm already on their artist roster. I'm a Gator artist. But I usually dealt with, you know, their artist relations guy. I never talked to Crystal. So he put me in direct contact with her. I sent her an email. Didn't hear anything back for about 3 or 4 days, you know, and I was like, okay, well, guess they're not interested in that. So, but then all of a sudden I get an email back from Crystal, and apparently Crystal wanted to, you know, check out some background on me and everything. So we started talking, and once she got involved, it really just took off. And through Crystal, that's how I met you and the NAMM Foundation and some specific people on the NAMM committee. Crystal reached out to different companies, and I reached out to some different ones that I was already endorsed by. You know, we put the whole thing together, and I'll be coordinating, I guess we're calling it the top 100
after party.
That's right.
To benefit the NAMM Foundation.
That's right. So I told her at one point, I said, it'd be great to get a charity involved in this. And she said, well, why don't we just get NAMM involved in it? Well, you know, I hadn't done anything like that before, so I was like, wow, okay, if you can, fantastic. Dumb thing to say, of course you can. So, you know, she reached out to you guys, and we put it all together, and I think we've thrown this entire thing together,
in three weeks.
2 or 3 weeks, yeah, it's
three
crazy.
Weeks.
Crazy.
3 weeks, and so just to summarize, this is an official after party at the Hard Rock Cafe, private room, second floor on Broadway here in Nashville. After a full day of NAMM events here at the Convention Center and a celebration for our top 100 dealers, which we do as a really wonderful after the Convention Center closes. And then we all sort of pull ourselves together, put out our dancing shoes,
that's
and go
right.
down to Hard Rock Cafe, and we're going to have a wonderful party for the NAMM Foundation. And the beautiful part of it is this was really generated by the NAMM members.
Absolutely.
And that was what was so heartwarming to us. And when we got involved with just helping with some logistics and, of course, the acknowledgement and the sponsorship agreements and whatnot, but it came right out of the heart of our NAMM members who are exhibiting here at the show. So it's just been really, really, really exciting. And you were a big piece of that glue, because we've got a stage and we've got performers and we've got NAMM members, and I think Ron is performing and Alan is performing. The lawyer and the accountant are performing. Bernie Williams, who's on our NAMM Foundation Board of Directors, former New York Yankee center fielder,
right.
jazz artist. Howard Paul from Savannah
That's
is
right.
coming up. They're doing a remarkable jazz set.
It's crazy. Howard and I live in the same city, but we've never actually met.
Oh, that's meant to happen.
I was on the phone with him. I was like, yeah, Howard, how have we never crossed paths?
You need to have an after party to meet. So that's really good that we're having this after party. So, yeah, it's going to be, it's spontaneous. We've never done it before. We hope that we can show enough gratitude towards you and to everyone that has helped us with this. And there's already a lot of glimmers in people's eyes that we want to do it again and,
Absolutely.
Involve a lot of people. The fact that we have a lot of NAMM professional musicians like yourself are playing and are fronting the bands and are organizing, but then we have a lot of NAMM members sitting in our own NAMM. Joe Lamont, president and CEO of NAMM, is going to play.
For sure.
Bernie's going to play, as I mentioned, and that represents such the spirit of NAMM.
Absolutely. And Phillips.
And Zach Phillips, our head of professional development.
Derek also?
Yes. Yeah. Great. I didn't know Derek was going to play.
That's from what I've been told. I never actually spoke with Derek.
Our comptroller.
That's right. A lot of great players are going to be at this thing. And, I know Nicholas Wells is coming down from New York. Nicholas played with Five for Fighting for a little while, and he's done some great gigs up in New York. And And we got Dante Palmentieri, who's Chaz and Jonna Palmentieri's son. He's going to be coming down to perform for it. I believe Harvey Levy is also going to be playing a tune for us.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think Harvey's got this great tune that he sent to me called Tyranny of Love, I believe it's called. And that's the only song he wants to play. He was like, I just want to do one song. I said, that's cool with me, man. No problem. Whatever you want to do. And I think we're going to have an open jam at the end of the night for anybody in the crowd who wants to come up and jam.
I probably won't be there at the open jam.
You're not going to be there till 1 a.m.?
No, I'm not. I have two board meetings the next morning.
She'll
so,
be there.
Not the open jam. I would say I would only stay if I could sing or bring my ukulele and play. But next year, I need a year.
Okay.
I need a year to plan.
Just 1 year. Next year, you're on that stage.
Right. So, Thomas, we want you to play a little bit for us. Can you do that? And can you tell us what you're going to play and sing? You're going to sing for us?
Sure.
Tell us what it is and take a sip of water. Do whatever you need to get.
This song here that I think I'll do is, I didn't know I was going to be playing until about, 30 minutes ago?
I know, but that's what we like to do here on Talking at Music Education. We like to be very spontaneous.
Yeah, for sure, and that's great. So this song actually won an IMC award in Los Angeles for Best Alternative Artist and Best Rock Artist in the 2017 IMCs.
Congratulations. Yeah,
thank
How wonderful.
You. And the music video has been directed and produced by Miss Jonna Palmentieri, and that's up in New York. So I just got finished with the music video. I'm going to be releasing that out to the public very soon.
Great.
Yep.
Great.
So the song is called Maybe I'm Crazy. Depending on who you ask, that might be true. Breaking down the years before, nothing short of satisfaction, staring down my simple form. Distractions. I'm caught in a trance. climbing the wall. But I'm coming down, not to be useless, threw it away. I'm feeling enslaved in my mind. Can I get through this? I think I'm seeing what I've been feeling, looking at me, never ending. You're on the outside looking in. You think I'm running, and I think it's funny, this love I hide away. Maybe I'm just crazy. Needless to say, my road never turned. Life on the edge, no irritation. I'm keeping the course, the time flying by. My relaxation. I think I'm seeing what I've been feeling. Looking at me, it's never ending, 'cause you're on the outside looking in. You think I'm running, and I think it's funny, this love I hide away. Maybe I'm just crazy, a little crazy.
Thomas.
That's the best I could do for this early in the day, you know.
This early in the day, right, right.
I was not warmed up.
No, but you, congratulations with that.
Thank
really.
You, I appreciate it.
And as I said to other musicians that have played on our little desk concert here, you know, we can talk and talk and talk, but then you pick up an instrument and play an original song, sing an original song, it just all transforms.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's all transforms. It's what this is all about, right?
Yeah. I try not to think too much when writing songs, you know. Sometimes I can't help it, but
just let
best
it,
way to do is just feel it and let it go.
Let it come through.
Absolutely.
Right. So I'm delighted to be with Thomas Claxton here, a wonderful guitarist, singer, songwriter who's spending a enriched life as a professional musician, doing a variety of things. We wish you so much luck with the launch of your music video. That's of this song,
yep.
Right? Coming that's out right. soon. So we watch for it on, from your website. How can people be in touch with you? How can they follow your work and doing what you're participate with what you do?
Go to thomasclaxton.com. That's the best way, the official website. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/thomasclaxtonmusic and Twitter, tclax_music. Find me on there, and that's got all my schedule, sound clips and everything, and different places I'll be at.
And we'll wait for the launch of your next album.
That's right. That'll be coming up very soon.
Very soon. Great. And we thank you for joining us. We thank our wonderful friends at Intertalk Radio for hosting us at Facebook Live, and for you being with us for Talking Up Music Education, a podcast of the NAMM Foundation.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. NAMM. That's Mary L. N-A-M-M.